This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm Brent DeHart here with Dave. Did I say that too fast? Dave Bourne? Brent DeHart. How about that?
Yeah.
If I say it too fast, it sounds a lot like Brenda Hart.
Brenda Hart. It does. Hart. And if I'm you hoping... say my name too fast, sounds like a porn star. So.
Dave Bourne. I had not noticed that, so thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. That was sticking in your head all day.
We're having fun here on Newsmakers. Welcome, everyone, to the News Hour. Thanks for joining us. We're going to talk about some of the things in the news here locally that are really important and some of the things that get buried in the last sentence or two of a news article.
Oh, and don't forget, we don't have the mayor today.
Yeah, mayor's going to come in later in the week.
Yes, Thursday?
Thursday.
Thursday.
He'll be here later in the week to talk about the vote last night. So we're going to hold off on that.
Yes.
Anyway, we'll talk to the mayor on Thursday. All right. Dave, I want to dive into this. Amazon. It's kind of a good thing, but it's one of those, I don't know, I think we all live in this information age where there's so much information, it doesn't really get filtered. So anybody with three working brain cells can form an opinion, and it ends up in a news article, right?
Yeah, right.
So there's always something to complain about, and that's what the news outlets are looking for, somebody to complain. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This one was pretty fair. Of course, it came from Salem Reporter, and they did a pretty good job. So Amazon's hiring. We all know that. Amazon's hiring here in Salem. They've got a minimum wage of $15, and there's some supposed controversy about working conditions at an Amazon fulfillment center. There was a tiny little demonstration of like 15 people in the Midwest, and then some concerns in Portland. You know what it comes down to is some people don't like their employer and they don't like working where they're working, but that doesn't make it a case to our news article, right? All right, before we get into that, though, we have to make fun of Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Isn't that like required? I mean, so as we all know, and I'm sure Rush has been talking about it and what have you, but he purports that he's, you know, Democratic Socialist, and he thinks everyone should make $15 an hour. And mm-hmm. $15 an hour is totally different, mind you, if you are in Seattle than it is if you are in a small city in Arkansas.
That's true.
But he wants to do, you know, the same thing for everybody in America. Anyway, so as campaign workers, they're making salary. But in political campaigns, a lot of people work long hours, and they figured out that if you divide their salary by the hours, they're not making $15 an hour.
Right.
So what's, and especially for a former employer, my current employer, but I used to hire a lot of minimum wage workers, entry level workers. And so the fight about $15 minimum wage all has to do is, will it hurt their ability to get their job, to get their entry level job? Will
right.
it hurt people's ability to even have enough hours to support their families? And what does he do? So he cuts back their hours. He's like, realizes the economic unsustainability of trying to pay them 15. He can't pay them more, right?
Right.
Oh, well, we can't pay them more. So therefore, only work this many hours as if. Because they're not going to work those many hours. They're still going to work the long hours. The rest of them are just going to be volunteer hours.
That's just wrong.
I know. But it's amusing as all get out. I mean, it is just funny. And they're having a field day on the right and the conservative news outlets and commentators and about welcome to the realities of economics, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, like, you would think that he would be schooled in that. I mean, he's preaching it.
Mm-hmm. You would think that he knew that he would be roasted.
Yeah, like, that too.
So I can't pay you anymore. Your salary is the same. I can't actually pay you for the hours that you're working at $15 an hour. I'm not capable of paying you $15 an hour for the hours that you work. So therefore, work fewer hours.
Right?
Choices. But yet, this is the same person that says it's not going to cost any jobs. It's not going to result in the loss of hours worked. I'm like, but you just did it in your campaign.
All right.
Not the point of the talk conversation. Amazon. So they're hiring. And they have pretty good, you know, they've got benefits. And the biggest one is health benefits. So you right. can go and you make $15 an hour as a minimum. And I think here in Salem, it's going to range, you know, $15 to $18 an hour to work in the fulfillment center, which is a great name, you know, for a distribution center. For yeah. a distribution and warehouse work. It's a warehouse and, you know, shipping and receiving is what it is. For the fulfillment center.
But it's fulfilling.
Yeah. Well, maybe not for everyone. All right, so Amazon, it's great that they're here. They're hiring. There have been complaints about that there are alarms that go off. They're probably safety alarms, and they're too loud, and the warehouses are too hot. And those are workplace conditions you take up internally. And if they're really bad, if they're egregious, then maybe you make a call to OSHA or, I don't know, something.
But open a door.
Man, now it's Tweet City, and everybody has to. Anyway.
So are they quoting these people on Twitter? Is that what's going on?
Well, it results in they get press because 15 people do this walkout and do a demonstration.
Gotcha.
So I don't know. I thought Amazon had a very measured response and said, hey, we'll put our work conditions and our package up against anybody in Oregon or anybody.
Any other business?
Yeah, anybody business of the same.
Nice. So,
all right. So... in Portland, there was complaints in Portland as well. Excessive heat, overly loud warning siren. And then that place, it's called Shakopee, Minnesota. They staged a protest. They thought it was unfair working conditions.
What?
Right. And this is going to be a surprise for you, but they got supported from this tech workers in Seattle called Amazon Employees for Climate Justice.
Oh, boy.
They have a subgroup for climate justice inside of people that work for Amazon. Climate justice. Oh, they're supporting the strike, and that is not a big surprise.
That's
all
wow.
right. So, Amazon's quote: the fact this is a quote. Fact that Amazon already the fact is Amazon offers already what this outside organization is asking us to do, asking for. We provide great employment opportunities with excellent pay, ranging 15 to 18 and a half an hour in the Portland region.
Right.
Full-time employees receive industry-leading benefits include comprehensive health care. That's very expensive for an employer.
That's big.
20 weeks of parental leave, paid education, promotional opportunities, and more. We encourage anyone to compare our pay, benefits, and workplace to other retailers and major employers in the Portland metro and across the country. I like when people stand up for themselves.
Yeah, that's
I like
good.
When companies and businesses, because now it see people like, oh, we got to apologize. We've talked about this on Newsmakers before. We have to apologize. We might have offended somebody. We may have created somebody to think that somebody else might be offended, so they need to back off. And they're like, we're not backing off. We think our workplace conditions are fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know, wintertime, they'll be praising Amazon for having warm workplace.
Yeah. So, and then the quote goes on, regarding the small protest that occurred on Wednesday, roughly 10 associates participated in the event outside the facility. It was obvious to the more than 600 employees that worked there that an outside organization used Prime Day to raise its own visibility, conjured misinformation and a few associate voices to work in their favor, and relied on political rhetoric to fuel media attention. Throw it down, Amazon.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
Throw it down. This is an outside third party. You suckered in a few people who worked inside to do this so that you could get media attention. Political rhetoric. Fact is, Amazon provides a safe, quality work environment in which associates are the heart and soul of the customer experience. Wednesday's event shows that our associates know that to be true. 10 people out of 600 on the Prime Day walkout. Again, I like it. We're just going to stand our way. I don't know. I'm not a huge Amazon fan. I'm not a fan of any company that looks like they're going to take over the world.
You think
like,
so?
You can't live without them. There's a whole Google, Amazon, you know, Facebook thing.
Well, there's more than one. So
yeah. there's more than one.
So they can't just take over the world.
All right.
Google's not going to let Amazon do that.
One last huge point buried deep in the article.
Really?
Yeah. Well, and it's peripherally related because they're talking about customer demand. Now they have three facilities in Oregon,
yeah.
right? And Salem is opening and they're firing up and they're going to be larger goats. They're not going to be the little... you know, bags. Okay. The warehouse customer demand, it says, is driving the growth, right?
Right.
This is a spokeswoman, Eileen Hurds. The warehouse will serve much of the Portland metro area and other parts of Oregon. In other words, trucks on I-5.
Pretty much.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the thing that shouts out the page to me. The warehouse will serve much of Portland metro area and other parts of Oregon. That's why we need Amazon employees for climate change, right? Or whatever the thing was.
Yeah.
This, folks, when we're talking about getting to Portland and to PDX, and we haven't talked about the air service in Salem for a while, but we're going to, that is more trucks on I-5.
Yes, it is.
It's here in the Mid-Valley. We appreciate the jobs, and actually the truck driver jobs are our jobs. But that should not be lost in it. As far as, isn't this distribution, hey, folks, you better be building transportation infrastructure, Salem City Council, ODOT. Everybody better realize that this is more trucks on the road, and they're going to serve the Portland. It's not like the Portland area fulfillment centers are going to satisfy everything. Some of this stuff right here in the Mid-Valley is going to the Portland Metro.
That's right.
All right. One more thing.
Good catch, by the way.
One more thing. Last thing. Last paragraph.
Okay.
Taxpayers are helping foot the bill for Amazon Salem location, according to this news article. When plans for the Salem warehouse were unveiled, economic development officials noted that the site would be eligible for upwards of $3.7 million in tax incentives over 3 years. All right, folks, let me tell you what that actually means. Let me tell you what it really means.
Break it down, Brent.
Taxpayers are not helping foot the bill. They're not. You know what? They're receiving right now. You know what the taxing authorities are receiving right now? Butkus. Nothing.
Zero.
They're getting nothing.
Yeah.
They're not receiving anything. So it's not costing the taxpayers anything. Amazon was given an incentive that they don't have to start paying their property tax for a period of 3 years. We've talked about economic development zones, business opportunity zones, all these things. It's not costing the taxpayer anything. Especially in a state, people, where the state government relies on income tax because they're creating income that is taxed. So there's going to be tax revenues coming in, payroll tax revenues, income tax revenues, property tax has a 3-year abatement. And guess what happens in 3 short years? $3.7 million of property tax goes to everyone's general fund, the city, the county, the school district.
Mm-hmm.
The transit district, everybody gets property taxes, will start to receive that in 3 short years. Don't apply this baloney. I hate that. I hate that. They've created something from nothing where there was no revenue and no taxation. And now there's payroll taxation. Now there's income taxation. In a few years, there's going to be property tax taxation.
Mm-hmm. Good count.
Taxpayers are helping foot the bill. Okay, we got to take a break. Running long. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne, and this is Newsmakers from 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne. Hey, I just wanted to give a shout out. We talked last week about it was a little auction taking place in Shooter's Cafe and Saloon to raise some money for Carissa Fretwell and her son Billy. In case you missed the article in Statesman Journal, they did raise a few $1,000, which is great. Oh, actually, $5,500 in addition to the GoFundMe page. So
that's good.
Anyway, sad story in our community, but applaud those people stepping up and wanting to do some help for the family. And thanks to Shooters, there were about 70 different people, organizations. They donated things. They made little packages. They raised $5,500. And I don't know what the GoFundMe page totaled up to, but I pledged. I promised her I would on the phone, so I wanted to let you know I followed through.
I did get that email confirmation.
Then I posted it. It's a pretty fun little tool. Anyway, it's very expensive to pass away.
Yeah.
And very expensive, especially suddenly, unplanned, and you don't the last thing you want to do is have a situation where a family's really struggling with the grief and not having any money to pay the bills.
Right.
And especially if you're trying to do what is dignified and right by your family members and so forth. So applaud them and their efforts. And thanks to everybody who showed up and who donated. All right. That being said, let's talk about guns.
Okay.
Yeah. So we saw in the last legislative session, you know, there was an effort to have this somewhat comprehensive gun bill, but it was really centered around storage of guns in the household, trying to tell you, Dave Bourne, at your house, how to stow your guns.
Isn't that already on the books?
No, it is not. So there's a couple of provisions. There was a measure that a gun owner, if you're a gun owner and your gun was stolen out of your vehicle, stolen out of your house, or you've lost it somehow. Trying to figure out how do you lose it? Oh, I went to the movie theaters with my gun. I left without it. I don't know.
Yeah, it fell out of its holster.
It does require that it be reported.
It walked away.
If you lost it, then report it. And presumably that's so that they know that there's this gun out there that has with a certain serial number that in the hands of somebody who shouldn't have it. So anyway, they did not get the bill passed, the proponents of this, so they're looking to do the preliminary steps of an initiative petition to put it on the 2020 ballot, November 2020. And really, that this is insurance, so we got to follow the politics again. So they hope that this comes back, like you and I said it would.
Yes, we did.
This thing died in a political compromise, right? That was air quotes, in case you didn't hear them on the radio.
I definitely heard them.
This thing died in a political give and take, right? But we know it's coming back.
Right.
We know who the governor is. We know who has the House and the Senate. This thing is going to come back. However, so the proponents are hedging their bets, and they're going to file and try to collect signatures to put it on a ballot for November 2020 in the event that the legislature doesn't pass the legislation next year. And that's a short session, folks, so it's just the month of February. It's really, really tight, and only the top priority things really go through.
Right.
So
that would not include House Bill 2020, would it?
Yeah, I think it would. Yes, I think it would.
Seriously.
So,
After all the drama?
Oh, yes.
They're going to try again.
Yeah. I think I don't know. We'll find out.
Why do the politicians not learn?
Well, who was it? I don't remember the Democratic lawmaker. I don't remember if it was a senator or House. But her statement was, the voters gave us a supermajority.
Wow.
... So that means you can do whatever you want, right? They gave us a supermajority.
Wow.
So this is what we think is right. This is what we do. She didn't say that. She just
arrogance.
Said the first part. Yeah. So this gun bill, I get what they're getting at, especially if anyone's lost a child to gun accidents, right?
Yeah.
Because frankly, you know, people could have almost no rational thought capabilities, right? And they can buy a gun, right? But do they do what responsible gun owners do, right? And the fact is, they even admit, most gun owners already do this. They're putting trigger locks on. They've got a gun safe.
Right.
Right? It's, you know, out of the range of toddlers and even burglars. You know, they've locked it away. Most of them already do.
And already have traveling safes that they put in their trunks of their cars.
So a lot of responsible gun owners. Yeah. So what the legislation is basically saying, if someone gets a hand on your guns and there's an accident, we're going to cite you for not being safe. It's called like the seatbelt kind of theory. We're going to tell you to wear a seatbelt such that, and we're going to tell you to stow your guns. Most people are already doing it, but we want to capture the rest, and so we want to make it in statute.
Wow.
So petitioners, Henry Wessinger, Jenna Pasalacqua. That's a great name. Pasalacqua, if I'm pronouncing that correct. And Paul Kemp. They're from Portland, and Paul's from Happy Valley. They want to reduce injuries and deaths associated with guns that have accessed unlawfully by children. Okay.
Okay.
All right. I can get what you're after. I'm not always a big fan of having a big blanket thrown over a small issue.
Right.
But it's not small to anybody.
Yeah, I get that, too. But
yeah.
there is such a thing as over-regulation. I mean, come on.
So, right, people don't really like it when the government walks in their front door and tells them what should go on inside.
Yeah.
Right. All right, so they tried to, they filed a similar petition, then they dropped it last year because they didn't have time to gather the signatures. So then they went to the legislature, and then it became part of this bill. Okay. So now that that didn't pass, then they're going to go back and do the signature gathering again. And hopefully they won't have to do it, right?
It gets a little tiring when we tell them no. And they keep bringing things up again. Gun control, climate change, and more green.
They don't work for you. They don't work for you. They work on your behalf to make sure that they do what they need to do. Make sure
I'm doing my homework on this next election.
This thing is called Initiative. Thank you. Thank you and everyone. Initiative Petition 40. So it has a name and a number. IP40. IP40. We're going to hear about that.
I'm going to write it down.
This is what it would require now because it doesn't have all the provisions that we saw in the legislative bill. It doesn't have them all. So it would require gun owners store their guns with a cable or trigger lock.
Okay.
So
you can never use it.
Or it's 3 o'clock in the morning. You hear a sound. You're like, where's that key?
Or where's that key?
Or in a secure container with a tamper-resistant lock. Okay?
Oh, what's that code again?
All right. So there's the sentence. And again, bottom of the paragraph. This is the one that really should frighten you. Specifications for the container where you're going to store your gun would be established by the state's health agency.
What?
All right, folks. Legislature passes a bill. They pass a law. And then it goes to the executive branch to administer it,
right?
They get to set the rules. And those are unelected people, and sometimes it's frightening the way they administer and enforce the rules. The legislature should do everything they can to define as much as they can and not leave it up to a health agency to tell
a
you.
A health agency. Yeah,
specifications for your container. Can you imagine? Let's say you already have a container and you already have something that where you store your guns at home. Well, this could pass, and then the state's health agency is going to make a list of appropriate containers for it. And if not on the list, you're in violation.
That's just wrong.
Yeah.
Law enforcement should be involved in that one.
Yeah.
We have to take a break.
All right. We're going to take a break. We got a couple more big things happening in the community. Let's talk about them here on Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. It's Brent DeHart here with Dave Warren. I just want to wrap up the initiative, the IP40 talk, before we start talking about mini houses for the homeless.
Oh, boy.
That's a very interesting topic.
Yeah.
I might have a thing or two to say about it. All right. So IP40, the initiative for safe storage and so forth that we were talking about before the break. Tina Kotek, of course, our House Speaker, said it is the House's top gun safety priority for 2020. So you could almost be certain to see it in February. Interesting thing about this is Mr. Wessinger, who is proponent of the bill, says it should not be a partisan issue. Don't you think this is definitely going to be aligned Democrat-Republican? Guns rights? Gun owner rights?
Yes.
Says it should not be a partisan issue. Claims that most Oregonians already support this. And to his credit, he does say that most gun owners already act responsibly, but
again, throwing a big blanket over a small problem.
Yeah, they're claiming that 65% of people in a poll favor requiring firearms to be locked up when they're not being used, and requiring the reporting of lost and stolen guns. Last thing about this, because those are the two things this IP40 would do. However, it doesn't have some of the things in it that the Senate bill had that died, supposedly. It had criminal penalties for the gun owner. And that's what we're saying. And that was really getting people up in the arms.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like your gun is stolen and a minor gets a hold of it and there is a tragic killing or injury, and that the person that owns the guns could be criminally cited. Like go to jail, go to prison.
That's wrong.
Because that's been taken out.
Well,
so
thank
that's
God.
Important to know in the distinction between what was Senate Bill 978 and is now IP 40 and what's going to happen in February. All right. Mini houses.
Do I need to build a soapbox for you today?
No.
No?
Nope.
Sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I don't have much of a take on that. I just want people to understand what the issue is.
Okay.
And how they're...
Well, you have homeless people.
Yeah.
They need a house. They're building small houses.
Well, this is an initiative of the United Way. So the United Way...
go ahead.
Yeah. And they're saying maybe this is an alternative to get people into housing that isn't subsidized by the government.
Ooh,
how do you
like that?
Hey, United Way.
Yeah.
Way so to everybody go. Else, I mean, rents, everybody knows rents are up.
Yes.
Rents are up, folks. And
it's forcing people onto the street.
Yeah. Banks and the government, they consider you, you know, paying too much for your housing if you're paying more than 30, some say 35% of your income.
Okay.
As House Speaker Tina Kotek was saying when her push for the missing middle was her bill this last session, was people are spending 50% of their income just to the roof over their head.
Right.
So what about people who are on Social Security and or Social Security disability and they're making $1,000 a month? Their rent needs to be $350.
Right.
And that was what the United Way did. They took to the whiteboard and said, how do we make this happen? And they worked backwards. They reverse engineered the problem. So I love the quote. It's right at the top of the article from the Salem Reporter, Ron Hayes, who's a great guy. He's mm-hmm. been helping in the community for a long time. He's the executive officer of United Way of the Mid-Willamette Valley. His quote, affordable housing can't be built affordably. This is intersects what we've been talking about, and any home builder will tell you there are so many regulations that it becomes more and more difficult to build a house that anybody can afford.
This is true.
Your entry-level house. An entry-level house suddenly went from sub 200 to 350
yes.
in the last few years.
Yeah, or more.
Yeah. So, mini houses. I don't know if you've looked at them. We looked at them. They looked really, really cool. A very simple way of living. And honestly, America could use a little simplicity.
Sometimes.
We did not carry forth and looking into that once we found out the place that we were looking at didn't allow big dogs.
Oh, okay.
So that's just not living for us.
Right.
I gotta have a big dog around.
Well, if you're got a dog or a cat, I mean, you could have a cat in one of those little houses, but I would use them for camping, so.
Right. Anyway, mini houses. So they developed a 300-foot square foot tiny house. It's sitting over the United Way parking lot, not very far from where we sit right now. So Social Security benefits average or earnings are up $1,000 a month. A lot of Americans are in this position where
correct.
That's only income they're going to have. So how do you put a roof over your head for $350 a month if you haven't, you know, spent 30 years and paying off your mortgage? So their goal now is to build 1,000 units over the next 10 years. So in other words, average 100 units a year. They're going to start with 25 tiny homes on 1 acre. On 1 acre.
Wow.
Dave, 1 acre.
Imagine the plot of land you could have with a tiny house.
That is not very big. However, what is this about? It's about putting a roof over the head of people who have no income and they're on the streets and don't want to be on the streets.
Right.
Right? So these houses, it's kind of cool. I mean, they're going to obviously have a full bath. They're going to have a mini fridge. They're going to have a 2-burner stove.
Place to sleep. Place to shower.
Right.
Place to hang out. Wash their clothes.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of these people who, like you were saying, they're getting pushed out. And they're in an apartment, but rents are going up, and suddenly they just can't afford it anymore.
Correct. That happens a lot.
Yeah. They can't afford it, or they can afford to stay there as long as they don't want to eat.
Yeah, right.
Right. So here's the alternative. This federal housing programs, the Section 8, it could be a 3-year wait, easily. Marion and Polk County.
Yeah.
It can be a 3-year. So you sign up. You can have no income. Maybe you're disabled.
Right.
And you could get on the waiting list, and it takes 3 years. What are you going to do for 3 years? You're going to live in the park. You're going to hope you not die during the winter. in the warming centers. I mean,
that's wrong.
So anyway, very creative. I like how they're trying to build a business case to make this happen, and they're putting some money behind it. And we're going to do a pilot project. And if these first 25 go, then maybe they can do 100 a year for 10 years.
So how much does the person pay to get these small houses?
They'd be renting, if someone moved into, they'd be renting at $350 a month. There's some estimation in here that this house that they've created as a model costs about $70,000. They think you can do it for $70,000, land and building. Of course, if you're putting 25 units on an acre, that really stretches out. You know, it really spreads out the cost of the land.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Ron Hayes, CEO. What do they call him? Executive officer, Mid Valley. I hope they're successful. It'd be a very interesting experiment. It'd be very interesting to see if the nonprofit, the NGOs of the world, the non-governmental organizations, create a solution that can pencil without requiring a government, ongoing subsidy every month, every year, in perpetuity.
Right. They could almost put manufactured homes on those.
Yeah, but not this thing.
For that price.
Yeah, but land and infrastructure. It's a 300 square foot house.
Right, but but you could buy a manufactured home for that price. It's $70,000.
Brand new?
No, not now, but yeah.
Anyway, it comes to the issue of, you have to balance regulations, and I just hope that somebody says, you need to do an environmental... Hope that they do not say, you need an environmental impact statement, and that'll take 10
who
years.
Who says that?
The federal government says that a lot.
I'd like to know who says that.
Yeah.
Which department says that?
And it'd be interesting to see if the federal housing programs get involved in this effort at all. Because frankly, the number of units, and the city of Salem, folks, does have a housing authority. We don't talk about it a lot. The city council doesn't talk about it a lot. But the housing authority administers the housing programs in the city, right? All that money is not general fund. None of that money is general fund money. That money is government grants from, I believe it's HUD,
okay,
from the feds, so that they can run a program. Similar to how Oregon Health Plan is the Medicaid program that's funded by Medicaid dollars from the feds, right? So it's an Oregon Health Plan, but it's federal dollars coming in. Salem Housing Authority, federal dollars coming in. They administer the federal housing programs.
Wow.
Very little politics in that when it comes to city council, because you're not fighting for resources for police and fire. You're not fighting for resources for library and parks and so forth. So this is a manufactured home. A Salem company called 2020, the numeral 20, and then the word 20 is the name of this company.
Oh, okay.
At least
it's a local company.
Yeah. And also, they have handles on the bathroom wall and wider doors so to accommodate wheelchairs, because this is also it's not really a homeless initiative. This is preventing people from being homeless initiative.
Right.
Because people on Social Security and on disability.
Right.
So, hey, they've got grab bars in the bathroom and they've got wider doors to accommodate a wheelchair. So... it's very interesting.
Hmm.
So Mr. Hayes worked with the company, and like I said, gets the cost up to $70,000 or less. And then you finance it, and you pay rent, and it's unclear who would own the houses, if United Way would be the housing authority for these developments, or whether they would turn to a private developer and turn this over.
Property management, maybe? Yeah.
Another interesting thing I saw that the walls aren't stick-built. They're made from insulated concrete panels. They're a cheaper alternative.
Huh.
Insulated concrete panels. If that is what I think it is, I've seen that technology at home shows and things like that. It's really interesting technology.
Wow.
Yeah. And supposedly greener than cutting down trees.
It makes them heavier, too. So.
Yeah.
Just saying. Not going to be blowing that one away.
All right. Hey, United Way, way to think outside of the box. Way to start with the whiteboard and problem solve. I like it. Hey, it's been a great hour. We're going to come back right after this with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKM. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. I have a question for you, Dave Bourne.
Yes, sir.
Do you think the governor should be recalled?
Yes.
Okay. Why would we recall her?
Overreaching empowerment, pretty much.
Ooh, overreaching.
Overreaching.
Like that.
Yeah.
So is that something?
That's just one of the things.
We should go through the process of recalling her because we don't think she's doing a good job, or should we recall her on a ballot? After she's served the term, you know, do we kick her out of office, or at the regular election cycle, or does she really just need to go now?
Go now.
All right. Well, you know, as we've heard in the news, there's an effort from the Republican Party to recall the governor, Kate Brown, and I think a lot of it has to do with the overreach,
yes.
The whole executive abuse of power. That I'm going to do this anyway. I'm going to shove it down your throat. And
well, I think what really started that was her announcement that she was going to use the executive order to pass House Bill 2020.
Yes.
That was infuriating.
The cap
for
and
me.
Trade.
Yeah, the cap and trade. That's infuriating for me.
It is. You would think in this day and age that executive power would be defined and there would be brackets on it at the presidential level. This is the exact same conversation we're looking at the national stage.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
How much power should Obama have had? How much did he wield, regardless, and like without asking?
Yeah.
And the same thing, they ask the same thing about Trump. What can you do by executive power? Can you limit immigration or flights from certain countries? Can you change what's happening at the border? Can you move troops? Blah, 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 blah. How much does the president have? How much does the governor have? Can the governor really initiate a cap and trade system without legislative help?
No. No. Governor executive power is for our state security, natural disasters, right? Sending out the troops and sending help and first aid or whatever to disaster areas, or flooding or fires or whatever, mm-hmm. But not climate change.
Well, it's to administer the laws that the legislature passed. I mean, we got three branches of government, folks, so why don't we, if you can't get what you want from one branch, that doesn't mean that the executive branch, meaning the governor, gets to make the laws now.
No, that's not how it's supposed to happen.
Maybe she'd like to step into the Supreme Court and cast her vote in there as well.
Wow.
As long as you're jumping, branches of government here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I get it. Overreach, and this is what I have been saying through the legislative session, right?
Yeah.
That maybe the Democrats are going to hang themselves with overreach.
I think that's already happened.
So there's the pushback, and we loved seeing all that, those truckers, the logging, mm-hmm. the transportation, the agricultural sector saying, hey, we're the jobs, we're the people you're supposed to protect, and we don't want this.
Right.
Right? And so Kate Brown doesn't care.
Apparently not.
She doesn't care about that and what Oregonians want.
No, she cares about who's supporting her campaign. That's who she cares about.
I try to always leave out the possibility that I'm wrong about things. Right?
Yep.
So I try to, I don't know if listeners noticed, but I try to make a purposeful distinction between I know, I think, and I feel.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And in politics, too often it's I feel driving the public policy.
Right.
And cap and trade is the same thing. I feel this. We're all doomed. We're going to be extinct in 2035, 30. And maybe I think it too. But you don't know it. And so.
Not a fact yet.
Yeah. Big, big distinction. And she should leave open the possibility, the governor, that she's not right about this. And that Oregonians who don't want it, maybe they're right. And not just ignorant. Not just a basket of deplorables, her own little version of basket of deplorables that live in Eastern Oregon mm-hmm. that don't believe what she believes, right? So the recall effort's going on. There's a recent article about why they're really doing this. It's not going to be successful and so forth. And
they think it's not going to be successful?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing with the Trump. It's exactly this. It's they are not exactly the same, but parallels to Trump in impeachment. Do you have high crimes and misdemeanors? Do you not like the guy? Do you not agree with the guy? But do you have high crimes and misdemeanors to remove him from office? Governor Brown, the same thing. Are we really going to raise to things? Well, you could have every Republican in the state vote to remove her from office in a recall, and you're going to lose. You have to get the people in the middle to vote for you.
Mm-hmm.
And what has she done that's pushed people off the edge to make, you know, maybe want to take her out of office? I think it's a pretty tough, tough job to try to accomplish. So they think it's going to be unlikely to succeed, but they like talking about it because it ignites the base.
Right.
It gets people talking about the issues. It gets people emotional about what's going on. It keeps them locked in instead of giving up. Right?
Right.
And I think a lot of conservatives in America had kind of given up until Trump came around.
Right.
And the people that you hadn't heard from him for a while, suddenly here he is, and they came out and voted. All right, so they're talking about this is going to ignite the base. It's going to keep the conversation going. It's going to keep people riled up. It's going to keep people informed on the issues and so forth.
When's the next election?
Yeah, she just won re-election.
See, that's why they're trying to do the recall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, we're looking at 2022.
Four more years? No.
So party unity, this is a quote from the article.
2 years, right? 2 years.
Fundraising opportunities to gather and talk about it, and are you going to collect money for the party and its initiatives? And then, frankly, people are riled up now. Might as well strike while the iron's hot, right?
Yeah. Trying to get people involved.
engaged because they're really mad about what happened in the legislative session.
Yeah.
So, anyway, very interesting.
Involvement.
True. They're going to try to collect enough signatures to put it on the ballot, but it's pretty high. This is different than the initiative petition a little bit. They have 280,000 signatures they need, just over. I need 15% of every vote was cast in the last gubernatorial election.
That is tough.
Really tough.
That is tough.
You got to do this. It could take us 3 years to do it, and by then we can vote her out.
That's true.
All right. We're going to go. We're going to come back tomorrow, and later this week we'll have the mayor on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a great week to be listening to Newsmakers.
Yes, it is.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us for your News Hour. We're going to do this again next time tomorrow. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and this is 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.